Welcome back in, everyone, to a fabulous new episode of Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper. We are very thrilled to be bringing you the production that we are today. We had the honor of seeing it just a couple weeks ago, and it is absolutely brilliant. Such an imaginative retelling of a classic tale. And joining us to talk to us today about this production, we have the actress and co-artistic director of Fiasco Theater, Jessie Ostrom. She is here to talk to us about Fiasco Theater's presentation of Pericles, which is playing now through March 24th at Classic Stage Company. And you can get your tickets and more information by visiting classicstage.org. Truly, this is such a brilliant, brilliant retelling of a very classic tale from the theater canon. And I've never seen anything quite like it. So I think the perfect person to kind of continue with this elusiveness, if you will, is our guest. So let us welcome on Jessie. Welcome to Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper.
Thank you, Andrew. Thanks for having me. It's a delight to get to chat with you today.
I'm so excited to be chatting about your show, Pericles, because it is just so fantastic. It was just a clever way of telling this story. I don't want to give anything away, but it was just from the word go. I was like, oh my gosh, this is so much fun. It was like truly watching a cast play for about 2 hours. And it was so wonderful. So why don't we start by having you tell our listeners a little bit about what Pericles is about?
Yeah. I mean, it's a weird, bonkers tale that goes all over. Shakespeare wrote this play. There's a lot of, you know, scholarship that wonders if he wrote the whole thing or if it was a co-writing situation with another writer contemporaneous to Shakespeare named George Wilkins. We used some of George Wilkins' epic poem of Pericles in places in our adaptation, but it's actually a way older story that I think had been told by a sort of Homer-like storyteller named Gower. In, I want to say, the 13th century. There's a lot that's very Odyssey-like about it. It's this one human named Pericles who goes all over and goes from being, you know, a lover in pursuit of marriage to a refugee, to finding love and acceptance, to then losing everything, being at what he thinks is the bottom of his existence and not even being able to speak. And then he finds salvation and describes his own resilience. And that story, I think that epic poem is from maybe the 13th century, and Shakespeare went to that source material to write the play. But it's set even earlier than that. It's set in ancient, ancient times. And so it's really about resilience in the face of an unpredictable, tempestuous world and the ways that human beings can have hope. And I think something that drew us to this story at Fiasco was that sort of hopeful idea of perseverance and faith and trust in riding the waves. And at Fiasco, we always do that through a community lens because we're an ensemble. And so I think it's not spoiling anything at this point because the show's opened. We chose to, for our production, to share the role of Pericles amongst four actors so that the human being who's portraying the central character changes at each sort of major life phase in his journey. And there's nine of us that tell the story together. And so we share the role of Pericles, but we also, the rest of us, double and triple and quadruple roles to tell this very sweeping tale with just nine humans and a couple of boxes in a really beautiful little intimate space over a classic stage.
Beautiful, beautifully well put, without giving all the tricks away. And I'm so glad you mentioned, you know, all the boxes, because that was the first thing that caught my eye when we walk in and see those boxes essentially in a circle. And I was like, so what are we doing here? What's going to happen here with this? And it is within that simplicity that, again, I think you all were just playing. There was simple costumes. You were...
Yeah, I mean, that not as a rule, but that tends to be Fiasco's wheelhouse because there's a lot of shared love for this amongst us as a company that drew us together. Is that, to me, that feels like the magic, is that's what theater can do. That's different from film and TV, and it's different from spectacle shows, which are also awesome, right? But for me, the real magic and why I continue to pursue this as a life choice is that it feels like a magic trick. We can create something out of nothing with actors and an audience and a story. And, you know, so, and that's sort of like a core belief of ours, is that's really what you need, is people in a room sharing a story, people listening and receiving that story, and text. And that's where that exchange is magical. And so we, even when we have bigger budgets, we like to make sure that we're leaving space for the audience's imagination, because it's a key ingredient in that joyful process of exchange. And we usually start any production process by asking ourselves, well, what do we need physically, and only what do we need, as the first question, and kind of build from there.
I love it. That's wonderful. So, curious to know, how did you all land on this show? Like, where did you come up with the idea to do this show and to modify it?
We have always had a love of Shakespeare, because we're an actor created company, and we're a bunch of nerds who really like language plays. And Shakespeare is an amazing teacher. It asks a lot of you as an actor. And so it had been a while since we had done a Shakespeare. We sort of like we came onto the scene with a six actor Cymbeline back in 2009 that continued through 2010, 2011, and had an off Broadway commercial run and toured. And that, so we were sort of, we began with Shakespeare, and then we've done some other Shakespeare's and some musicals, but it had been a long time since we had done a Shakespeare, and we were wanting to come back to it as a company. And right after the pandemic, we were sort of looking at various plays by Shakespeare and asking what we should do next. And Devin Hawk, who plays the final Pericles in our production as well as other roles, said, I think we should look at Pericles. And we read it. We just sat around and read it as a company. And it really spoke to us in ways I wouldn't have predicted. I think I thought, I was like, we're not going to like this one, right? There's not like, you know, these like great monologues or anything in it. But it was, as I was saying before, it was this story of resiliency and hope that felt like, this is a play we need to tell now about survival and, you know, the unpredictable nature of the world that we're living in terms of everything that's going on. There are climate disasters in this play, and it just felt like this story of resiliency and a joyful ending was something we wanted to investigate as a group. It felt right for right now, and felt like it was a story that deserved being told now. And it's not one that's done a lot, which we also kind of like to take on ones that people don't have a ton of baggage coming into as an audience. And it lends, especially if you share the role of Pericles, it lends, really lends itself to being an ensemble show, which is something we're always looking for, because we love to work as a group.
Wonderful. I want to use that to snowball into my next question, which you've kind of spoken about a little bit, but I'm curious to know, what has it been like developing this piece?
Yeah, so we first developed this piece through an initiative Fiasco has called Without a Net, which is a program we do where we rehearse something for about 10 days, and then we invite an audience in to watch us do it, so that we challenge ourselves to work really fast and furious and make big, bold choices, and so that we can start getting feedback from audiences sooner than you would in a typical rehearsal process to know what's landing. And I really love this program because it doesn't let us make any assumptions about what is going to land with an audience, because we bring them in really soon. And we do it, we start mostly on book, and we did it for about 2 weekends for audiences, and we're off book for parts of it, but it's like, it really is a totally on its feet workshop. And we gave ourselves what we needed, which was some boxes and some costume pieces to do it. And that got us really excited about it, and audiences responded really well to that. And so and Jill Rafson, who's the artistic director of Classic Stage Company, came and saw that workshop and wanted to co-produce it with us at Classic Stage. And so we went into the longer rehearsal process at Classic Stage already knowing a lot about how this story works in this way for audiences, which was really exciting. And then it was just a gift to get to sort of knowing the big strokes of the storytelling, go back into a rehearsal a year later and have a little bit more time to delve deeper into the text stuff and look at it through an actor's perspective with a little bit more time than the sort of fast and furious throw it up model of Without a Net. But personally, I really like this model because you have to figure out what you're making by making it. And so to start with some like big, bold things and then get the time in this dream scenario where it did get picked up for a real run, then have the time to work out the details, is, I think, a really thrilling and efficient way to work.
Sounds amazing. I love all that. So, with this piece and this epic story you're telling, is there a particular message or thought you hope that audiences take away?
Oh, what a good question. I think that's really individual, but I think there's something, I think there's a spiritual offering in this play, and that the way that that's received is can be about however anybody has an individual understanding of one's relationship to the greater universe, or however one wants to define spirituality or a higher power. But there is something really beautiful in where I think this play ends. It's a little bit of a spoiler, but not really. I mean, it's Shakespeare. It's very public domain. But the last line is Gower saying, "New joy wait on you," to the audience. And that moves me every night, that the offering is, we've all been on this journey together. Human beings are resilient. And our last wish for you is new joy. New joy is waiting for you. And that idea, and that my hope is that audiences walk away with some kind of relationship to a faith that new joy is waiting. And we might not know what it looks like. And that spaces, faith spaces, can look like all kinds of different things. For me, it's the theater. You know what I mean? It's the group of people coming together to perform this ritual of telling a story. I think that is a spiritual space, but that can look like a lot of different things for different people. And I hope people walk out feeling like there is joy on the horizon, even if we can't see it right now.
That is wonderful, wonderful, brilliant thought to be passed into on to your audiences. And a good lead into my final question for this first part, which is, who do you hope have access to Pericles?
I love this question, everybody. Fiasco cares a lot about accessibility in many, many different ways. We care a lot about making this Shakespeare's language feel and sound and be immediate and accessible to modern ears. And we work really hard to make that possible so that our shows are welcoming to folks who love Shakespeare and love to study it, and also folks who have never been to a Shakespeare play or think they hate Shakespeare, because what we're prioritizing is the storytelling and the relationship between we, the storytellers, and the audience, and that is primary. So I hope anybody who likes stories comes to see Pericles. We also, it matters a lot to us that folks who historically have not felt welcome in theater spaces do feel welcomed at Fiasco shows. And to that end, we've done a whole bunch of specific accessibility initiatives with this show. We offered three childcare matinees in partnership with PAL, Parent Artists Advocacy League, and Broadway Babysitters, so that included in your discount ticket price is free on-site childcare, because it's really hard to go see theater as a parent, as a caregiver. It's really hard logistically, and it's very expensive. And so we're trying to reduce that barrier for caregivers. We did, just this past Sunday, we did a sensory-friendly performance in partnership with TDF, which was amazing. Specific that all those tickets were free, and it was for anybody in the neurodiverse community and their families to come see this. We have closed captioning at every single one of our shows on your own device. For folks in the hard of hearing community, we did an ASL interpreted show. We have two open captioning performances coming up next week, the 18th and the 19th. For this run, we were not yet able to make an audio described performance happen, but it is on the horizon for future Fiasco shows. And I think our work speaks to multi-generational families really well. So I think on the website we're suggesting 12 and up. My 7-year-old loved it. I think folks, you know the kids in your life and whether they would enjoy sitting still for a quick 2 hours or not. But I think it's personally, I love seeing multi-generations come to our show together as an event. And that I think our work speaks really beautifully and differently to young people and middle-aged people and older people. And that this story speaks to all of at many different stages of life, and that whatever you're coming in with, it will reflect something back to you. So my hope is that everyone feels welcome and feels like there's something to take away from this work. And we are just thrilled to open the doors wide and want folks to come in and know that they'll feel supported in our space, whether they think they like Shakespeare or don't, have never been to the theater before or not. So that's my big long answer.
second part of our interview, we love giving our listeners a chance to get to know our guests. Pull the curtain back, if you will. Now, I want to start with our regular first question, which is, what or who inspires you? What composers, playwrights, or shows have inspired you in the past, or are just some of your favorites?
I mean, there's a lot of people inspire me. I'll start with Sondheim. I have this crackpot theory that Shakespeare and Sondheim are the same soul reincarnated. I'm probably not the only one who has this theory. People have probably written theses on it. But I love, they're, you know, two of my favorite authors because of the way that they use language and sound to communicate feeling and on such complex levels, and the way that both of them as writers let the complex things be complex and the simple things be simple. And I always walk away from hearing or reading or performing or seeing their Shakespeare and Sondheim's work feeling like something has moved through my body, like I've experienced something, even if I didn't live through the thing that the character lived through. And so that really inspires me. And I'm also going to say I had the incredible privilege when I was younger of working with Jan Maxwell, who was an incredible, incredible New York theater artist that we lost way too soon to cancer. And she was a really impactful inspiration on me, watching her work with such bravery and commitment, and this other quality to her process that I really try to take inspiration from and bring to my work, which is that she never took herself too seriously. We like to say in Fiasco, we take the work really seriously. We don't take ourselves too seriously ever. And she was just a model of fierce commitment, caring at all times, simultaneous to a ton of laughter and remembering that we get to play pretend for a living and there's like no emergency. And that spirit of play with her incredible spirit of rigor is something I try to bring to my work as an artist, as an actor.
That is a lovely list. I love that. Powerful. Let me ask you, what is your favorite part about working in the theater?
My favorite part about working in the theater is the audience, is interacting with the audience. It's really, it just feels magical. It feels magical that an exchange happens and that the work can affect and inspire people in ways that I could never have predicted, and that total strangers share an experience with the people around them and with me. And I really love getting to interact with people before and after the show.
Beautiful. That's a great, great answer. And a wonderful lead into my favorite question to ask guests, which is, what is your favorite theater memory?
This is a hard one because there's so many, but I'm going to pick this one, which is I was so lucky and fortunate to get to work on Sondheim's Into the Woods with Fiasco over many years. Actually, we did a production at the Carter Theater in 2012, maybe. That was, we also got picked up by the Old Globe in San Diego. We got to do it there. And then it came to Roundabout in New York and it went to London briefly. And I got to go with it to London and play the baker's wife at the Minier Chocolate Factory. And by that point in 2016, I was pregnant with my son, with my first child. And playing the baker's wife while pregnant is my favorite theater memory. The first preview when we had audiences, there had been all this talk about like, will people be confused? Because, you know, for everyone who knows the baker's wife, it's very, very important to the story that the baker's wife is not pregnant at the beginning of the show. And we at Fiasco were like, no, because this is a suspension of disbelief. Our whole currency here is imagination. We are imagining that we are people we are not. We are asking the audience all the time to imagine that bodies that are not those bodies are in spaces that they're not in. And so why can't a pregnant body be imagined to be not a pregnant body? And we did, part of the show was a pre-show speech that we did live where we said, hi, we're a Fiasco, turn off your phones. Thanks for coming. There's an intermission. And we just added, when we got to London, we added to that speech if I was doing, we rotated who did it. If I was doing it, I would say, and you may or may not have noticed, but I'm pregnant. Or somebody would say, this is Jessie, she's pregnant. And we did it. And this happened every night, but I'll never forget. This is my favorite. It was the first preview. I said, I'm pregnant. And the whole audience went, and so I think it made the show better, actually, because part of that pre-show speech became the actual verbalization of the contract of imagination. And so what we would say is, hey, this is Jessie. Or I would say, I'm Jessie. I'm pregnant. Thank you. Thanks for the congratulations. The reason I'm telling you is because I play a character called the Baker's Wife, and it's very important to the story that she is not pregnant at the beginning of the show. Will you suspend your disbelief? Are you in? And they would all say yes and cheer. And then we would start the show. And it's my favorite memory because I everybody's experience is different, but I loved performing pregnant. It was so fun. I had actually at that point I had like so much energy. I felt like I was like, oh, I'm not alone up here. I have this like other little passenger in here with all this extra energy. But what I really loved about it was like verbalizing that sort of community agreement of like, we're in this together. And it just felt, it felt so empowering and what, like we were all after the same thing. And suddenly we knew each other too. It was like, I think part of why I loved the effect it had on the show is like the audience felt like they knew me and knew something about actually my life. And then we were like, okay, great. We've been humans in a space together. And now we're all going to pretend that this story is happening. And it made that act feel even more transformative. Sorry, that was a long answer.
No. That was so wonderful. What a memory. Oh, I love it. Thank you so much for sharing that.
Thanks.
As we wrap things up, I would love to know if you or your company have any other projects coming on the pipeline that we might be able to plug for you.
Yes, thank you. Fiasco has a reading coming up on April 8th. If folks want to look into getting a ticket for that, we're doing a reading of an awesome play by Susan Glasbow called The Verge. It's starring Tony winner Miriam Silverman, and it's happening at the Brooklyn Botanic Garden. So your ticket includes touring the greenhouses, because this play is set in a greenhouse. And we're partnering with CSC and also with Expand the Canon, which is this amazing initiative. If you don't know it, check it out, from Hedge Pig Ensemble, which is trying to expand the canon to include plays written by women. And so every year they release a list of, I think, 20 plays, classic plays, which means the author is no longer alive, from different periods, written by women. And they unearth these plays that are amazing, were hits at the time sometimes, but have been sort of like lost to the canonization of theatrical history, and make this list and make them accessible. If you are a member, you can download them so that you can do these plays, read these plays, put them on your syllabus if you're a teacher. And this was on their list this year, this play, The Verge by Susan Glasbow. I had never read it. It's crazy, amazing, Tennessee Williams, Eugene O'Neill level, like drama. Miriam Silverman's going to be phenomenal in it. It's one night only. I think tickets start at $40. April 8th, check that out at fiascotheater.com. And then we have a bunch of stuff in the pipeline that doesn't have dates yet, but I'll tease some of them. And you can go to fiascotheater.com and sign up for our email list to get more information. I promise we don't over email you. We've got a collaboration in the works with Deaf West Theater to work on a Shakespeare production. So we're doing some workshopping on that. We have a commission from the Old Globe Theater in San Diego. That's an adaptation of a Herman Melville short story called Bartleby the Scrivener, the story of Wall Street, which we're hoping we'll have a production next year and maybe come to New York after San Diego. We've been helping to workshop this new musical called Diamond Alice, written by Alexander Gemignani and Ben Steinfeld, and a whole bunch of other titles that we're looking at and have in the pipeline. And we love to do workshops and readings that are free and invite the public in early on to the process to get your feedback. So stay tuned and please, please come check out all of those works in progress. And as soon as they have dates, it will get announced.
That all sounds amazing. I'm already excited about all of this. Great.
Thanks.
And it leads to my final question, which is, if our listeners would like more information about Heracles or about you, maybe they'd like to reach out to you, how can they do so?
FiascoTheater.com, theater with an ER, because we're Americans, is our website. You can find all the information there, and you can contact me through there. It's Jessie at FiascoTheater.com.
Well, wonderful. Jesse, thank you so much. So
Thank
much for
you,
speaking with
Andrew.
me today. This has been so wonderful. I could talk to you for hours, I feel like. Like this is one of the smarter conversations I've had, and I just want to pontificate continuously. And it's a huge reflection of the brilliant show that you all have. So thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
My guest today has been the actress and co-artistic director of Fiasco Theater, Jesse Ostrian, who is currently in Fiasco Theater's presentation of Pericles. It's playing now through March 24th at Classic Stage Company, and you can get your tickets and more information by visiting classicstage.org. We also have some contact information for Fiasco Theater as well as for Jesse, which we'll be posting in our episode description as well as on our social media posts. But make sure you catch the show before it's gone. It's a brilliant, brilliant production. Again, that's Pericles playing now through March 24th. So until next time, I'm Andrew Cortez reminding you to turn off your cell phones, unwrap your candies, and keep talking about the theater.
In a stage whisper.
Thank you.
If you like what you hear, please leave a 5-star review, like, and subscribe.
You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Stage Whisper Pod.
And feel free to reach out to us with your comments and personal stories at stagewhisperpod@gmail.com.
And be sure to check out our website for all things Stage Whisper and theater. You'll be able to find merchandise, tours, tickets, and more. Simply visit stagewhisperpod.com. Our theme song is Maniac by Jazzar. Other music on this episode provided by Jazzar and Billy Murray. You can also become a patron of our show by logging on to patreon.com/stagewhisperpod. There you will find all the information about our backstage pass as well as our tip jar. Thank you so much for your generosity. We could not do this show without you.